My name is Ian Potter. I'm the Director of Sustainable Energy at the Alberta Research Council, and it's my pleasure to be the moderator of this session. I feel quite small compared to the resumes of and backgrounds of my four colleagues. We've been asked with, say, $64 million question. I don't know how you could put a number figure on this. Energy and the environment and the economy, how do you actually deal with it? Can we have it all is the question. And it's way more than $64 million. I wish that was as small as it could be. The following questions were really poised to the panel. Is it possible for Alberta and Canada to have the triple E approach, energy, environment, and economy, in a balanced portfolio? And whilst you may have been here present for the individual researchers' type reports from my colleagues such as Bill Gunter and Xiaomei Li, this is more, I'd say, more from a strategic overview panel session. The things that need to be done, the things that should be done, and how they can be done together. What sort of paradigm shift do we need? Is it a step change, or is it that major shift in technology response, policy response, whether it's from industry, government, the sort of outreach to the public, and the feedback from the public that needs to be listened to? And we all know it's got to be done, and many of us know how it's going to be done, but there's barriers still. And it's identifying those barriers and overcoming those barriers. And when people talk to me about barriers, I say 250 pounds can demolish quite a few barriers as I walk through them. But it's not as simple as that, unfortunately.
Only
250, yeah, Paul. Yeah. I won't talk about your age. I said I wouldn't mention your age. When I look at my four panelists, Paul's going to speak first. And Paul is the, to put it bluntly, the shit stirrer, as he likes to be called sometimes. Likes to get people thinking. A bit conjecture, but really makes you question where we're going. Next on the list is Eddie. Eddie is Mr. Innovator, as far as I'm concerned, Mr. Energy Innovator, and the work he's done within the province and within Canada is just astounding. Marlo Reynolds, I've known for many years, 10 probably now, from when we worked together at University of Calgary. And I would say in this particular session, he's the public conscience. He's the Pembina Institute saying, yes, it makes sense to do it, but this is how we can make it do it better. And this is what we need to remind the government and the industry all the time, making sure that we're stewards of our environment. And Michael Moore, who will be the last speaker, I'm sorry, Michael, about that, is the economist. Basically, he'll tell us, I would think, can we afford to do it and how we can actually put mechanisms in place and what sort of processes are needed to make sure that we do it from a fiscally responsible point of view. So with that, I'd just like to introduce my first speaker, Paul Hunt. Paul Hunt is the Vice President of Climate Change Central, which is a public-private partnership in Alberta to deal with climate change. He works with stakeholders across the whole industry within Alberta, whether it's energy, agriculture, forestry, transportation, housing, the list is endless, in developing strategies and taking actions with regard to climate change risks, mitigation, and adaptation. He's on several boards, one in conjunction with Eddie and I, both on the New Era board, the New Energy Resource Alliance for Distributed Energy. But in my mind, a role that Paul plays very well and a very important element of the Alberta scene is he's the chair of the Board of Governors of the Alberta Emerald Foundation for Environmental Excellence, which is really celebrating the successes within environmental type issues. And with that, welcome to the podium, Paul Hunt. Thank you.
Thank you, I think, Ian. good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm honored to have this opportunity to speak with you because I believe that you, as science writers, are vitally have a vitally important responsibility to translate and interpret technical and scientific information so that it's understood by and engages your audiences, particularly if those audiences are broad and you're talking about the interactions between complex issues like energy, environment, and the economy. Well, you know, I was feeling rather pleased with myself after I developed those opening remarks, because among other things, I do genuinely believe them. But then I suddenly realized the same applies to me right now. I've got to make myself understood and be entertaining to you. So here goes. Can we have it all? Well, Yes, we can, however, not without some significant changes. Having all three elements, energy, environment, and the economy, will require transformations and adjustments in our values as they pertain to our quality of life, the structure of our economic systems, and technology improvements and their application to enable us to do more with less. But really, basically, the answer to the can we have it all question just has to be yes. Otherwise, what would be the point? We wouldn't even be here talking about it. So, with that introduction, here's an outline that I'd like to talk about. Now, you know, given that you as writers are well-versed in poetic license, I thought you'd allow me this indulgence. So with apologies to MGM, I am going to talk about the ugly situation in which we find ourselves due to the bad attitudes and behaviors prevalent in society today. And I'll conclude by talking about the good examples that need to be replicated on a large scale. So first, the ugly part of my presentation. Oh, jeez. Sorry, Ian. I don't know how. How did that get there? There we are. Okay. So I'd like to begin by giving you a reality check to put the question, can we have it all, into perspective. This is an ugly part because, simply and bluntly put, our current rates of resource consumption globally are not sustainable. And this is particularly true with respect to energy from fossil fuels. In Alberta, production of conventional oil peaked during the mid-1980s, and natural gas peaked a couple of years ago. Globally, oil is expected to peak, according to some, 2007. That's just 2 years away, and that's driven primarily by the exponential development of India and China. Annually, consumption of oil has exceeded new discoveries every year since the early 1980s. For all industrialized countries, energy and the economy are so closely linked, they're virtually interchangeable. And for the last five decades, oil has been the preeminent fossil fuel, with natural gas growing in importance over the last couple of decades. The thirst for energy globally continues to grow, which really isn't all that surprising, given that our population globally is increasing and developing countries are doing just that. They are developing. And wanting a lifestyle similar to ours. The problem is that 87% of the world's energy comes from fossil fuels, which, as we know, are non-renewable and have environmental impacts associated with both their production and combustion. North America is the largest per capita energy consumer, and if we are to avoid serious energy cost and supply issues, significant changes are required, which would need the political will and strong leadership. Clearly, the challenge ahead of us is huge. So with respect to our energy, particularly oil and gas, we have to recognize that our non-renewable resources are just that. They are finite. Now, having said that, running out probably isn't going to be the major issue. It's the cost increases. For instance, in California, the price of oil in 1973 and natural gas in the year 2000 quadrupled as a result of a mere 5% shortfall. Globally, we must adapt our way of life to use less oil and natural gas, starting with being less wasteful, and that means improving our efficiencies, and using substitute sources of energy, namely alternative and renewables. Today, all our energy options appear to have limitations. You can read this list. With our current level of knowledge and understanding, these individual technologies by themselves are probably not going to be the answer. However, a combination of some or all of these energy resources just might be the collective bullet that we're all looking for. So I'll say it before you. This is the bad part of my presentation. Now, I'm not an economist, but from what I've read and what I understand, modern economics governs our lives. However, economic theory is premised on the notion that our planet has an infinite capacity to supply us with wealth and at the same time absorb our wastes and pollution. This is an illusion. We've been brainwashed to believe that growth is synonymous with progress and that endless growth and development is the answer to all our problems. But endless growth in a finite world, well, just isn't possible. Our existing economic model cannot sustain economic progress indefinitely. This slide shows some growth stats over the last century. Population, GDP, industrial output, energy consumption, they've all increased significantly, as so has our CO2 emissions, which grew 17 times. The world economy has expanded sixfold in the last 50 years, and as our economy grows, it demands more and more. We're fast depleting our energy and mineral resources. We're also consuming beyond the sustainable yield of the Earth's natural systems to supply us with food and water. We see evidence of this in our collapsing fisheries, falling water tables, and rising temperatures. Throughout the world, there are a number of harmful beliefs which are manifesting themselves in significant obstacles that just must be overcome. We've got to recognize that we are not the masters of our environment. Our resources are not infinite. The market is not king. It's not always going to be able to create a replacement for us. And consumption is not the only way that the good life can be attained. Suffice to say, at the bottom, the greatest obstacle to discovery and action, it's not ignorance, it's the illusion of knowledge. We think we know. In case you're not paying attention, this is the good part now of my presentation. Now, there are many different photos of Clint that I could have used for this slide, but, you know, I thought this one with a noose around his neck might be a little more symbolic. Things might not look so good, but if you notice, there is some slack and wiggle room, so there's reason to be optimistic. Technologies, until recently, technologies and industries used to be created and deployed first, and then in response to undesirable impacts, laws passed after the fact to clean up the mess. More recently, we see biophysical and socio-economic impacts being conducted, and mitigation and risk management integrated into the front end of larger projects. Balance between environment, energy and quality of life is definitely necessary, and favoring one of these over another for an extended period of time is not sustainable, and ultimately the system will crash. The balance between these three important components is actually the tenet behind the sustainable development concept. Although there's no single bullet, what is required, I think, is a sustained campaign of applied technology and innovation that would include technology for cleaner and more efficient fuel to energy conversion and more efficient use of energy, technology to capture and store greenhouse gases from large emission sources, like we heard this morning from Bill, technology that shifts us away from relatively few large centralized coal-fired generating plants to many interconnected small distributed decentralized generation units, as well as renewables. But you know, it's all very well to put our faith in technology, but let's not be naive. The creation of new technology takes many years, in fact, and you can't expect instant creativity, innovation, and market penetration. So even though many believe technology is our salvation, in my opinion, a more important element, which is often overlooked, is attitudinal and behavioral change on the part of everyone. Basically, as a society, we need to change the way we use energy in our homes, our places of work, the way in which we travel and transport goods. However, in order to get people to change, in most cases, there must be something new and improved to change too. It's all very well to complain about our gas-guzzling vehicles, but until recently, when the hybrids came on the market, our choices were fairly limited. The same also is true for our electricity. In most places, we can now choose to buy green power from renewable sources. Now, often things that are new and improved are more expensive, so some type of inducement or encouragement is necessary. So acting for the public good, I think governments need to create policies and rules to direct and incent desired behaviors, beginning, I think, with energy efficiency and conservation, renewable and alternative energy, use of recycled materials over virgin materials. And perhaps these ideas are best captured by the concept of internalizing the environmental costs of goods and services. the ultimate solution. Well, you know, it was difficult to generate this slide, and in fact, I hesitated to hesitated in including a couple of the bullets for fear that they would appear unrealistic. But frankly, I don't see a way around it. Solutions to the coming energy dilemma will, I think, have to include the industrialized and developing countries recognizing that oil and gas will become increasingly scarce and expensive, and that very significant changes in attitude will be required, hopefully before we're in the middle of the next crisis. Also, there's a need for significant energy reductions through efficiencies and conservation in order to extend the resources we have and give ourselves more time to make the necessary changes and transitions. Such actions will require the will and the wealth on the part of everyone, governments, industry, as well as individuals. Now, it seems to me that Alberta is positioned better than most in this regard, being debt-free, wealthy, having a well-educated and skilled workforce. And in addition, this province has the oil sands and vast coal reserves to help with that necessary transition if they are produced cleanly and efficiently. We heard this from John McDougall this morning. The key enabling factors are having the philosophy and strategy to make the change, or, in other words that I used earlier, having the right attitudes and associated behaviors to go along with it. Now, here are some good examples of some small-scale policy initiatives that are being used in some jurisdictions. They attempt to capture that that idea of balance that I mentioned earlier, a balance between environment, social, and financial values inherent in the that concept of sustainable development. First, there are incentives and rebates encouraging the purchase of energy-efficient or environmentally sound goods and services. My organization, Climate Change Central, ran a furnace rebate program last year that provided a $400 rebate to homeowners replacing their old furnaces with high-efficiency units. Another good example is energy portfolio standards that promote and require a prescribed amount of electricity generation from renewable sources. Another one is systems benefit charges, which have consumers paying a small surcharge on the electricity that they use. These funds are collected and then allocated to support low-income consumers, energy efficiency initiatives, R&D for renewables and alternatives, as well as the installation of renewables and alternatives, too. A final good example is the recent development of industry performance indicators and the trend to publicly disclose their performance, warts and all, in vehicles like triple bottom line reports and the Global Reporting Initiative. To wrap up, here are some Alberta-based projects that my organization, Climate Change Central, has been involved with. At the top left, Ride the Wind in Calgary, where electricity from wind is used to power the light rail transit system there. Top right, an innovative community-based project, a 52-home subdivision in Okotoks is being built with roof-mounted solar thermal panels or blankets that collect heat during the summer months that will be stored, and then in the winter the heat will be withdrawn to provide space heating for those 52 homes. Regular furnaces will not be installed in these homes. And at the bottom, district heating project in Grand Prairie that will use surplus heat from the 25 megawatt wood waste cogeneration facility that we heard Ann Hughes tell us about earlier. This facility that Xiaomei explained to us is a feedlot near Vegreville, east of Edmonton, producing manure from it's processing manure from about 10,000 head of cattle through a couple of anaerobic digesters that produce methane, which in turn powers a 1 megawatt reciprocating engine that generates heat and electricity. As Xiaomei said, Alberta Research Council are leading the charge in this project. Now, it's often said, and I think you'll share with me this because we saw a little of it earlier today, it's often said that hope rests with the young. Well, here's a great example that Climate Change Central is proud to have supported. Cochrane High School's science department, along with 18 students, raised $40,000, and they have installed 30 solar panels on the school's roof, as well as a residential-sized wind turbine. It's one of the first high schools in the country that's producing its own renewable energy from a student-led initiative. And the students seek to demonstrate that renewable energy is a viable alternative to conventional power from fossil fuels. I'd like to leave you with three examples of initiatives that we're working on and planning. First, we're planning a hydrogen fueling station using excess hydrogen from Refinery Row in Sherwood Park on the eastern outskirts of Edmonton. Hydrogen-powered vehicles, like the one seen here, will refuel at this facility. Alberta Solar. This project will install solar panels on municipally owned buildings in 14 different municipalities across the province, and in addition, to showcase the PV or photovoltaic technology. And in addition, 350 homes across Alberta will also be outfitted with these PV panels. And lastly, we're pursuing an interesting concept to influence market transformation of taxi fleets. We envision an incentive program for hybrid taxis or an arrangement with the taxi licensing bureaus whereby they give preference to hybrid vehicles. Now, I recognize that the positive effects of all these various projects that I've shown you by themselves are fairly negligible, but consider the effects if these actions were replicated through your province or across Canada or thousands of times throughout the world. Thank you for your interest.